Hey, Holly, are we connected?
We are connected.
Oh, good. And we have a good connection because sometimes I get a lot of static. So this sounds really clear to me.
Well, I tried to find the best phone in the house.
Good girl. I'm proud of you. So I want to tell my dressage mentorees that I have Holly Mason, horse trainer, artiste, if I can say it like that.
Of course.
Author and international specialist in the biomechanics of horse and rider with me here today. So you guys are in for such a treat. And Holly, I have your wonderful book, It's Never Too Late, which of course I want to talk about pretty soon. But first, I just want to ask you a little bit about your background, because in going through your book, I realized there are so many parallels in our lives, in our backgrounds. And can you just fill people in on where you started and your a little bit of your history?
Sure, sure. I grew up outside New York City, and I started riding when I was about 8. And my dad was a designer in New York, and so I was in and out of New York all the time, plus having horsey adventures out in the woods. And then I wound up at Rhode Island School of Design, which was an incredible experience, teaching one to really open one's mind to all the possibilities. If you kind of went the straight and narrow, you really got a hard time there. You know, they really got into you. And then, you know, horses came back to me. I kind of did a little during college, and it came back again. And then I, you know, like many Americans, I just went out and bought my first horse, which, you know, I was kind of in over my head. And worked with the Poulins for a while. I used to go up there. And
what was your first horse? What kind of horse was it?
Thoroughbred, of course.
Yeah, off the track?
No, he was not raced, but boy, he was the fastest horse I've ever ridden to this day.
Yeah.
He really had that, you know, that sixth gear. And so, you know, he was a little tough to train because, you know, he had so much energy. But through a series of events, Carl McCulka wound up on the South Shore of Boston, Spanish Riding School alumnus. And I went over there, and, you know, then I wound up getting another couple of horses. So I would take two horses to him, every couple of months for, you know, a week to 10 days and just really do intensive work, a lot of theory, watching, watching, watching all the time, and then come home and make all that information my own. So that really went on for about 5 years, and then, you know, life changes. You had to sell the horses because divorce, but they didn't stay away long.
Yeah.
You know, they found me again.
Yeah.
You know, somebody said, talk
in
to somebody,
your blood.
Could you come? Oh, of course I can come.
Yeah.
And then next thing I know, my original horse got returned to me at age 24.
Oh, my God.
Kind of all skin and bones and a wreck. And so I found a business associate to take him. And, you know, just everything came back again. And we put him back to work.
At 24.
Because if I was going to own him, I was going to ride him.
Of course.
And he, you know, he was the original It's Never Too Late guy. Because he just got all muscled up again and very, very fit. And, you know, I always kind of had, he kind of gone pre-St. George, so I always had threes, changes to three pretty well, but he started to offer twos, and I went, oh, my goodness. So
he offered them?
He offered them. He'd kind of flip a couple. I go, oh,
yeah,
those were twos.
Cool.
And, you know, and at age 27,
oh,
he confirmed flying changes to two.
Unbelievable.
So he was the original never too late guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
you know,
what he thought about retirement. I'm coming out of retirement at 24.
Well, and then, you know, that sort of opened my eyes to, you know, just paying attention to, like, geriatric things and how they do experiments with people in their late 80s and 90s. And they put them on a mild exercise program, and they still build muscle and strength. And, you know, it really is never too late. And, you know, and then riding just went along, and, you know, lots of different people came into my life. And, you know, you pick up things from this one and that one, including your very own self.
Mm-hmm.
I was a demo rider for you in 2000. I think that was the year.
Where and was that?
That was in Rhode Island, at Brookside Equestrian. Now your memory bank's going to have to work, huh?
Yeah,
you've seen a lot of people in your time, huh?
But yeah,
anyway.
So that's 10 years ago. You're asking me for... My short-term memory is fading, and you're...
What happened yesterday? Oh, no.
Yeah, really.
But I really started to get into much, much more about how it all worked, and I really was searching for a better way to teach position. I just thought that, you know, sit up straight, you know, keep your legs long. Okay, that's good. But I wasn't getting enough of that information. So I started to collaborate, especially with massage therapists, because they really have such an interesting sense of how the body works. And then an equine chiropractor came into my life. And that was amazing with what he knew about the horse. And then I could marry that with what I knew from human chiropractic, from having done marketing work for chiropractors and things of this nature.
Wow.
So, you know,
quite
all
an
my
eclectic.
Yeah.
Mix
oh,
here.
Yeah. Eclectic, all capital letters.
Yeah. I mean, everything you do is like that.
Yeah. It's kind of the design thing. I mean, when you go to art school and design school, you have so much intensity and you have to come up with so many ideas all the time that you look at everything because they push you to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then I was just curious. I wanted to know how it all worked because I just felt, you know, that riders weren't getting a very good shake on what do they really do with their bodies. You know, there was this culture of make the horse do this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, unless the person is really active in helping, you're in the horse's way.
Right.
And how do you develop vocabulary and understanding for people? So along the way, I kept trying to get my articles published, and I got to kind of know Patty Lasko at Dressage Today, and she came up to me at a one of the big NIDA functions up here, and asked me if I wanted to submit some solutions pages ideas, which I did.
Oh, and did you do the illustrations yourself as well?
No, more better.
More better?
More better.
What's more better?
I developed a relationship with the woman who does those illustrations.
And I know her name. It's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't
Sandy
think
Sandy
Rabinowitz.
Ah, right. She draws horses like breathing. I mean, I draw pretty well, but I don't draw like she does.
Yeah.
You know, she's a specialist, and... Yep. You know, that's why you go to someone like that. So when that was published, because we were working through Dressage Today, I never contacted her directly. The second the magazine came out, she called me up and she said, would you be willing to come down to New Haven and give me lessons in exchange for drawings?
Wow.
And I went, wanted to start screaming, yes, 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 yes. But I went, yeah, I can do that. That's very cool, you know.
Really? And then you get off the phone and you're jumping around.
Oh, I have been looking for an illustrator forever, you know, because collaborative relationships come from both parties having the desire to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had met many people who had the skills, but they didn't really have the desire. And Sandy really had that. And the wonderful part about working with her is the better she rode, the better she drew. The better she drew, the better she rode. It was spooky.
Funny
it was
how it works that way.
It was because she was visualizing better.
Yeah.
You know, and so a lot of the illustrations in my book were developed over years working with her because it takes so long to get the illustrations, to get the complicated parts out. It's really easy to make them really complicated, but we don't want to do that. We want to make it simple so people look at this is how the pelvis works, this is how your neck works. You know, this is how the human hip, this is how the horse's hip, these kinds of things, you know, what we took away. And then sometimes you'd have to really kind of mess with the proportions so that it looked right.
Right.
You know, because it isn't just draw it from the anatomy book and you're done. So that was just a fascinating process. And then as I was kind of, you know, I always knew I wanted to write about biomechanics and movement, the science of movement. So I had to do a lot of research, you know, and I went to vet schools and I talked to physiology professors and neurology professors and, you know, all kinds of things of that nature. I went over to Germany to see Gerd Heuschmann and spent a lot of time talking to him about the issues about the back as they related to the forehand and so forth and so on. But a lot of it...
And was he real receptive to that kind of dialogue?
He was kind of more about the back. You know, and I was really there to try to figure out in more detail how the forehand worked. And he kind of didn't think that was really critical in the scheme of things. And so it was intense, and he's a great guy, and he was very open. And, you know, we spent hours with the anatomy books and running, but look at this, and what about that, and back and forth and back and forth. And, you know, I actually came home not getting the answers I wanted. So I was kind of in a funk for 6 weeks because I said, wow, I have to figure this out myself. So I, you know, got into my books and talked to people I knew and really started to understand exactly the self-carriage mechanism of the forehand and how through lateral flexibility you develop those muscles for the horse to lift properly in all the different ways that it mechanically works in there. And then I had a marvelous opportunity. The thing I've been trying to do for years was go to a dissection clinic at Tufts Vet School.
Yeah.
And that was like 3 days of, you know, let's take apart all these different parts of the horse. And, you know, that was intense. I had done some dissections other places and vet schools and overseen things, but it wasn't the same as starting from the beginning, peeling back the layers and just looking.
And
you know,
so what kind of, what information did that give you that you couldn't have gotten from reading a book or the rest of your research?
It confirmed where I was going.
Yeah.
And a lot of this has to do with how the humerus of the horse works, you know, from the elbow to the point of the shoulder, and how the back muscles come down to a point and attach on the inside of that bone in the middle. So when the back is released upward, it pulls the humerus up and lifts the shoulders upward. It's really interesting. So I could actually get in and, you know, not to be kind of, you know, gross anatomy, kind of gross anatomy, but, you know, get in there when it was all cut away with the gloves and the blue suit and pull on this muscle and see how that worked and go, oh, that's exactly how that works.
Wow. And then, of course, because you're big into visualization as I am, that seeing sort of under the skin like that, I would assume that when you're riding or working or whatever, you're then visualizing what you've actually seen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and I think that this is the really hard part for, you know, I just want to say all the folks who teach is better visualization of movement, both in what the horse is doing and also in the human. And most of this visualization is the really hard part because it's in the torso of the rider and it's in the trunk of the horse, the stuff that's kind of hidden. You know, everybody can see the hocks, everybody can see the stifle, sort of. You know, but to really visualize how the hip in the horse and the SI joints and, you know, whether they're putting too much weight in their sternum, in their chest muscles, you know, instead of lifting between the forelegs and lifting in front of the withers and behind the withers. You know, those are the really hard things to see. But once someone has really shown you, it becomes much, much easier.
So,
you know, yes, go ahead.
In your clinics, obviously not being able to dissect a horse with people or have, you know, the human body there in that type of way, how do you get this across? Since visualization is such an important thing, how do you explain that to people in clinics?
Well, I usually work the horses in hand. So that gives me a way to have the rider step back and see how I'm going to move the horse around, and I'm going to tell them what I discover about where the horse is stiff. You know, and then I'm going to say, watch how I massage the rib cage underneath, see what that does to that inner hind leg stepping under, and, you know, kind of make it functional anatomy easy to understand.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, when I get the rider up, I have this little sort of thing I go through about, well, let's talk about position. So, you know, they're just kind of walking around, and I'll say, well, I start with the feet, you know, and you'll say, well, you know, but your feet have to be level, and you need a toe tap pressure in the stirrup. If you jam your ankle, just do it for me. Jam your ankle, now jams your knee, now jams your hip.
Yep.
So you can't do that. And then I talk about the long thigh with a soft knee. And then I really get into the pelvis, you know, are you sitting on both seat bones evenly? And I'll say, I can see, like most people, you're sitting back on your left seat bone, too far back. So you have to just let the horse swing that forward for you.
Allow it to happen. Yeah.
Allow it to happen.
Right.
And then that really starts to get them, first of all, gets them looser, doesn't it? Because now the horse is the therapist. Because almost everybody that I see for the first time, you know, they're pretty jammed up and the left hip sometimes the right, but that's usually when I see the anomalies, it's usually because someone was injured and had, you know, some kind of crazy thing happen. But, you know, there's sort of patterns that I see an awful lot of.
Are we jammed up on the left because most people are right-handed?
And if we're not right-handed, we live in a right-handed world, and we drive, by and large, right-handed cars.
Hmm.
You know, even if you're in the places where the cars go the other way, the gas is still on the right, and you brake with your right foot.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's all this right-sided stimulation where, you know, especially from cars, we're very fast on the right, aren't we?
Yeah.
And we're not nearly as fast on the left. And you could teach yourself to do it. I mean, the horses I ride, I'm correcting them all on the left all the time. So my left side is almost too strong.
Yeah.
And then it shifts and I get discomfort in my right hip because I'm so busy correcting on the left.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, you know, because I believe you're left-handed, aren't you?
No, I'm right-handed.
Oh, I thought you were left-handed. Well, doesn't matter. You know, I just find that people live in a right-handed world. You know, the doors, heavy doors open to the right, all the things that we do.
Yeah, never thought of that,
You know, most people are right shoulder forward, and it's kind of braced. It's a tension point.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of left hip, left side of the pelvis back, left.
You know, I'm sitting in my chair, and while you're saying that, I just look down at my shoulders and my hips, and that's exactly how I'm sitting.
Oh, don't do that.
Okay. I won't. I promise I won't anymore.
It's simple. And, you know, when people have this aha moment, I say, okay, just don't do it anymore.
Don't do it anymore. Okay.
No, we all laugh.
See,
that's impossible.
But that's the key, in, you know, awareness. If you're not even aware that you're sitting crookedly or your shoulders aren't level or your hips aren't level or your feet aren't level, I mean, you don't know to make an adjustment if you don't have that awareness.
Exactly. And I also think that, you know, generally in the riding community, people need to do more work on themselves, you know, because it's not just about getting on and going. I mean, sure, you can do that. But in the end, you know, you have to have a little bit of, you have to have body awareness and you have to be fit to do it.
Right.
And, you know, this is part of the reason I developed this. The first project I did was a DVD called Focus on Flexibility.
And, what do you cover in that?
Well, I have a little 8-minute warm-up for riders.
Oh.
And it's riding-specific exercises, and they're slow, and they're gentle, and they're meant to loosen you up and to diagnose every day, where am I stiff today?
Hmm. Can you give me an example of one or more of those exercises?
Well, the best ones, I start with people sort of laying on the floor with their arms out to the side, so they're kind of forming a cross while they're laying on their back. And you would swing your knees from side to side.
Mm-hmm.
And then you drop one knee in and then the other. And this totally gets your low back and your hips working. You know, and then you might cross one leg over the other and sort of pulse to one side, then change, cross your legs the other way and pulse the other way. You know, and then they're just simple dance things where, you know, you sit on the floor and put your feet together and stretch down over your back. And, you know, but there's nothing really new under the sun. It's just how you put the pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and I deliberately wanted it to be way less than 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. Because I don't, you know what I mean? This is like make a pot of coffee, do your exercises.
Yeah, because if you make it too long, then people just say, well, I don't have time for that, and they don't do it.
It's an overwhelming thing.
Yeah.
And you know, when I lecture, people say to me, well, do you do these exercises every day? I said, are you kidding? I do them at least once a day.
Yeah.
If I have a really tough day, I do them twice a day. When I ski, I do them 3 times a day.
Right.
You know, in order to keep that level of activity and really just be out there doing the thing and taking the tension out at the same time you're putting the suppleness in.
Right. And I think you and I are pretty much of the same generation. And I don't know about you, but I found that I think it was probably maybe around 20 years ago when I started to have injuries like groin pulls and stuff like that. And then I realized the importance of having to be flexible. And so it's become part of my daily routine. I have about 3 exercises that I do, and a couple of them are similar to what you just said. But I do them every morning, and particularly if I know like the weather's going to be colder or something like that, so
yep.
I'm going to be tighter just because of the temperature, I make sure
yep.
I do that because I know that's when I'm prone to an injury and that's just going to put me out of commission. So if you
yeah.
think of it as like, oh, you know, I brush my teeth, I do my flexibility exercises.
Right, this
you know,
is injury prevention.
Exactly.
It really is. And so, you know, part of the thing I'm really trying to get into the riding world brains is, you know, take the things you understand about your own physiology and whatever other sport you may do or any other thing, and please take that to your horse.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know now, you know, people, the old paradigm is, you know, you walk around a couple times in the long rein and start trotting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today we know that if you don't do some stretching exercises and warm-up exercises, if you were going to go running, you risk being injured if you
right.
don't warm your muscles up. So let's take that to the horses, and, you know, it doesn't have to be fast to be good for the horse or you.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the slower you do a thing as warm-up, the more complete it will be.
Hmm.
You know, this is a thing I've just started
because
working.
Of range of motion, is that what you mean? You can have
It has to do with both extending and then coming back in again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can get, if you say you're working a horse's hand, you want them to move sideways, and they kind of throw themselves sideways.
Mm-hmm.
That's not as good as if they place themselves sideways and deliberately take
mm-hmm.
each step, because they have to use more muscles to do it slowly
yeah.
than
take
they do
long,
to do it fast.
Full steps like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Cool.
And I just started working with a dance instructor who does Pilates on the reformer machine, which is, you know, when you see pictures of that, doesn't that look like the rack?
Yeah.
It really does. It really does. And everybody says, you should do this. And you go, oh.
Yeah, really.
It's the rack. And but the thing that one doesn't realize about that machine is, first of all, the weight is extremely light. And you do the work very, very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And you only do 10 repetitions. So it's not just, there's a way, you know, you could put the bed slides on that thing.
Yeah.
So you put your feet on a bar and you're going to push away and then let it come back in again. The pushing away, always easy.
Mm-hmm.
Coming back in equally as slowly, that's called deceleration of movement.
Hmm.
So this is kind of something I'm hatching for a new article, because I think it's so interesting, because then if you take that, again, human physiology to equine physiology, why are transitions so difficult?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's deceleration of movement.
Ah, cool.
So the horse has to hold himself in the canter and not fall into the trot, you know, with the Bambi on ice transition. You know, they have to sit down, wait, smoothly go through that transition from something fast to something slower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we all know that's one of the toughest transitions in all of riding.
Right.
You know.
So, you know, I love a couple of things when I said that we have so many parallels. I agree 100% when you say there's nothing new under the sun. And a lot of times people think that what I did, you know, because the first book I did was That Winning Feeling, which was bringing the mental aspect of the game. You bring the physical, the physiology aspect to the
right.
game, so to speak. But, you know, I brought the mental training to the game. Well, none of it is new.
No.
I took it from other sources.
Yes,
and
exactly.
applied it to the horses, just like you're taking human physiology and applying it to the equines. And it's that interesting mesh, taking from different things that might not be, you know, different fields that might not be obvious to people, that, hey, this
right.
applies to you and your riding and your horses as well. And I know you do a lot of mental stuff as well, but, you know, my
yeah.
focus has been the mental and yours is the physiology. I think it's just fascinating.
Well, and the other part of the mental component, which gets back to, you know, the title of my book, It's Never Too Late,
mm-hmm.
To learn to improve, to make a difference in your riding, is how we actually learn. And there's an awful lot of people out there who think, oh, I'm older, you know, I can't learn.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and, you know, now we know with sophisticated brain research, that we used to think after 50 it was all a downward slide. Well, that isn't. That is, no, it's not true. You
That's
know, It's the use it or lose it phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you continue to learn, your brain will build new synaptic connections. It physically builds more dendrites between, you know, the whole nervous system and
really?
How we move. Oh, yeah. And that was like an epiphany to me.
Wow.
That I knew that this worked because, you know, we all know individuals in our life who are, like, quite aged and they are sharp as tacks
mm-hmm.
and they're very engaged. And you think, well, how is this individual, you know, how did they kind of get that way? Part of it is they just kept learning. They
yes.
were interested in everything.
Yeah. I have a funny story to tell you about that.
Tell me.
My Aunt Rose.
I have one of those aunts, too.
You have, oh, and is she 92 years old?
No, she's in her late 80s, though.
Oh, there you go. Well, my Aunt Rose, she is such a hot ticket, and she lives in this kind of, it's an apartment building for elderly.
Yeah.
And she is a riot. I mean, I'll call her up. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, I went for a manicure and a pedicure today, blah, 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 blah. You know, she's
yeah.
very, very active. She goes to the gym. She in the oh. apartment complex, she works
right.
out. And at 92 years old, she'll say something like, well, you know, two mornings a week I volunteer. I have to go down to the front desk and I have to help all the old farts. Here she is, 92 years old, calling everybody an old fart. She has just arrived. But here's the cool thing about her. Just
mm-hmm.
like you're saying, as far as, you know, always learning and always being engaged, sometimes when I'll call her up and I'll say, what are you doing? She says, well, I'm watching a show on French cooking, on how to do French cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, are you going to be doing any French cooking? And she's like, no, I just think it's really fascinating how they do this. So she's so curious and interested. And I think, like you say, she's sharp as a tack. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I talk to her, it's like talking to a peer. It's hard
yeah,
for me
absolutely.
To believe she's that age. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
But
well,
I want
to be just like her when I grow up, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, me too, when I grow up. I don't know if I'll ever grow up. And I can tell you're
no.
probably not going to grow up either.
No, I don't think so.
But, you know, I found that interesting that you were saying that you can actually build the, did you call it synapses or connections? Or
synaptic connections
synaptic
in your brain.
Connections. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was sort of suspicious that might be the case because
yeah.
I remember when one of my friends, her mom was, you know, had cancer and she wasn't doing very well.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I don't know why I just thought this and maybe this is totally wrong, but I knew that when she was younger, she always enjoyed doing crossword puzzles. So I bought her a bunch of little easy crossword puzzle books because I thought if she had to engage her mind like that, it would keep her sharp, just like you
sure.
say, use it or lose it. Is that you think that's true even for a crossword puzzle?
Sure.
Yeah.
Anything that makes you, you know, go into your memory retrieval system
mm-hmm.
and also just all parts of your brain. You know how sometimes when you're visualizing a word, you're saying it, and all of a sudden you have no idea how to spell it. And then all of a sudden you kind of see it in your head.
Yeah,
you go,
absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
There we go. You know, so that's all part of that process. So even just the process of writing down the letters, you know, because you have to visualize in the little boxes. So all different parts of your brain are being used. I mean, and that's really one of the things about brain plasticity. You know, you see all these things on PBS about this. But, you know, there are many things that do this, like music. Music lights up all areas of your brain.
Hmm.
All areas of your brain. It's very, very powerful. Whether you're playing it or you're humming a tune, you know, there's all these things. And when you hear music, it reminds you of other things. Old memories come back. You know, if you're playing music, you've got the three-dimensional thing of what you're doing with your hands or whatever, then the tone through your ears. You know, and, you know, one of my little private secrets about horse training is...
It's not going to be private anymore.
I know. I sing or whistle to horses.
Oh, yeah.
To give them the rhythm.
Oh,
and number one, it makes them very quiet. Number two, they love it. I had a mare once that wasn't going to get on the trailer, and I said, if you don't get on this trailer, I'm not going to sing to you anymore.
Oh, you're not going to
sing on the trailer.
She did?
I said, oh, that can't be possible. She couldn't have understood what I meant.
Well,
it must have been the intensity with which I said it.
Yeah, really. I have a funny story about that, too. But I want to say one other thing. I use And maybe this is part of what also helps the horse relax, because like you said, you know, the horse is just a perfect mirror of what
perfect
the rider
mirror.
Is doing.
If I
have a tense rider, a nervous rider, a timid rider, mm-hmm. for me the key is breathing. So
yeah.
what I tell them to do is, just like you said, either sing or whistle, because I guarantee you, you cannot hold your breath and sing or whistle.
No.
And so by getting them to sing or whistle, they start breathing, then they start to relax, then their horse starts to relax.
Right. And also that's that whole thing with tone. You know, horses read our body language so acutely you can't even believe, you know. But they also hear it in the tone. So,
yeah.
you know, there's a whole thing about the quality of your voice. And you know how people mm-hmm. yell at their horses,
yeah.
and, you know, or the instructor yells at the person, and then the
oh,
horse
terrible.
Thinks it's being yelled at too. And,
yeah.
you know, this is just really tragic stuff. But it's because they differentiate the tone so easily.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and I've listened to some of your other interviews, and, you know, there is this whole sort of transcendent connection with horses that is just so cool, and it
yeah.
happens all the time. And a lot of that comes from, you really start to get that when that tone is, like, really with them,
mm-hmm.
you know. And especially, like, when I go in on the trail, mainly because I want to be sure that the deer hear me coming and they don't
yeah.
jump out and I'm in the next state, you know.
Yeah.
So I sing then.
Sure.
But I just find that there's kind of this whole thing that goes on out there kind of humming along on the trail. You know, and it also makes the horse make a tempo that's a
mm-hmm.
little brighter, so he's working a little bit harder out there. And you know,
or
so,
if he's too quick, you can
yeah.
sing something that will slow him down.
Right.
Yeah.
I have all these funny little tunes that I do with young horses that are kind of intimidating me.
So what's your favorite
tune?
Because
it makes me quiet.
Yeah, of course, of course. What's your favorite relax yourself when you're riding a young horse tune?
I don't know. Do you know this camp song, White Coral Bells Upon a Slender Stalk?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
that
nice.
One.
I like that.
Da, da, da,
that's great. Very soothing.
Very
I have
soothing.
To tell you a singing story, though. Here, you,
yes.
you know, you told me about the trailer. I won't sing to you anymore if you don't get on this trailer. Well, I have sort of the opposite story because, I mean, I love to sing, but at best, all I can say is I'm an enthusiastic singer. I am
there
absolutely tone deaf, no pitch, whatever. I have about a 3-note range, and I don't
like
know if
my
you
husband.
Oh, okay. when I sing in the car, my husband turns the radio up as loud as he can to drown me out, because I guess
oh.
to him it's like chalk on a board or something. But
oh.
I'm very enthusiastic.
There you go.
But I do remember my horse Eastwood, Woody, the chestnut with the four white legs. I don't know if you remember
yeah.
him at all. He had a kidney taken out. This is a long time ago, and I was always worried about his health. And so I had worked with an animal communicator for a long time, an older mm-hmm. guy out in California, and then he died. And so I was looking for another animal communicator because I always wanted to check in to see how my horse was doing. So I had contacted this woman, and I didn't tell her who I was. I didn't tell her it was a dressage horse. I didn't tell her anything. I said, I just, you know, want you to read the horse. Of course, energy is energy, and this is all
yeah.
over the phone. And, you know, the first thing she does is a physical workup. She starts at the head, and she works back. And she was telling me, you know, what she saw. She was, like, right on with the runny eye, and he had a scar
mm-hmm.
on the inside of one. It was just amazing. But then she said, he thinks you're really funny, but he hates it when you sing because
oh.
you're tone deaf. And, well, she didn't say tone deaf. Because your singing is so terrible, it gives him a headache.
So
I thought, well, I'm gonna put this to the test. So
mm-hmm.
I go to the barn the next day, and I have this bag full of apples. And he was like major chow hound. So in the
yes.
top part of the stall were bars. And I held up the bag of apples. And he had a really big stall. It was almost like a double stall. We called it the apartment. And so
mm-hmm.
he would come up to the bars, and he was trying to, like, squeeze his nose through the bars because he
mm-hmm.
wanted his apples.
Mm-hmm.
So I broke out into song. I did, who did, the, it's either the Love and Spoonful or the Young Rascals who did Do You Believe in Magic? Do you remember that song? Do you
Love
believe
and
in?
Spoonful.
It was Love and Spoonful. So I broke out into that song.
Yeah.
And I've got the apples in front of him. He turned around. No kidding. He turned around and very slowly walked away and stuck his head in the far back corner of the stove.
Oh, I'm really sorry.
I know. I mean, I gave him a headache. It's just like, so, yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
I think he was happy when I stopped singing. But I, you know, as far as tonality, like you said, for speaking, I'm always having a constant dialogue with my horses. And I think that that isn't like chalk on a board for them.
And again, you know, there's that soothing tone to the voice, and you know, just saying good or so, or you know, any of those things that are just low, quiet tones.
Yeah,
the horses get that right away.
Yeah, and not only the horses talking about energy.
Oh, yeah.
I remember at the farm I was at, there were two dressage arenas side by side. They were parallel to each other, with probably almost the width of a dressage arena in between them. They were grassy area. And one of my students, who's a top-level event rider, she was in the other arena riding a horse, and I was riding my horse in the first arena. And it was just the nicest thing. She said to me afterwards, she said, "I love riding while you're riding because I can hear you and I can hear you talking to your horse. And it's so soothing and it's so relaxing." That her hot, fit, thoroughbred event horses, three-day event horses, she relaxes, the horse relaxes, so she picks up on the energy, too.
Yeah, sure. I had a thing where I was teaching out in Indianapolis, and I usually have sugar, so horses understand that I'm the sugar lady.
Yep.
But I didn't have any sugar with me. It was too difficult to travel with, and I just hadn't gotten any, and all my clothes were clean, so I didn't smell of sugar or anything. And I would be talking to the owner, and all the horses came in to meet me.
Huh.
And I went, And it became so routine, I kind of didn't notice.
Yeah.
They'd kind of come and put the forehead against my shoulder, and I'd sort of be stroking them, finishing up telling the owner something. And it was only later that I went, oh, my God, they all did that to my friend who set up the clinic. And she went, yeah, they did.
Cool.
Because here was this soft tone.
Yeah.
Here I was helping their owner, their person, do something better. And they were like, well, who is this person?
Yeah.
I have to come over and meet her.
Yeah, very cool.
So, yeah,
so
very cool.
Speaking of that, you're teaching in your clinics and your training. Mm-hmm. Do you have, like, a specific approach in your teaching?
Well, again, I'm just trying to give people more information about the physiology in an accessible way, so it isn't, you know, like, you
rocket
don't need to
science.
Know where all, yeah, you don't need to know where all the muscles insert. I can't even remember that stuff. It's not important. It's trying to describe and talking in rhythm so that they can swing with it themselves.
Hmm.
And there's a lot about, you know, telling them when each hind leg is coming through and this is what you're feeling. Do you feel that? And if they don't, I just stick with them till, you know, something else happens and we have another opportunity. You feel what happens here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's just a lot of that whole business of, you know, make sure your spine's really in the center of the horse's spine. Just take a minute, kind of half close your eyes, really be there. Okay, now, you know, that kind of thing.
Encouraging,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, always, always, because one of the things I see a lot of is very, very bright women who really want to ride, and they've ridden a long time, and they don't have enough problem-solving information.
Mm.
So they now assume that they are dummies because they can't get it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that just breaks my heart, because it's not that they're dumb, it's that no one gave them enough information.
I've said them, your words have come out of my mouth, and people beat themselves up, and they think I'm a bad rider, and I'm this, and I'm that. They, like you say, they just don't have the information.
Yes.
It's not that they're not capable. No one's told them.
Right. Right, and I remember once teaching someone just to figure eight in the walk, you know, shortly after I started working with her, and she looked at me and stopped for a minute and said, "Why has no one taught me this?" I said, "Because I don't think they knew."
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, you can be mad at this former person that taught you because they didn't give you suppling, you know, good exercises mm-hmm. to learn with. But, you know, can you be mad at them just because they didn't know? I don't know.
Yeah, people can only teach you what they know.
Right, and that is also part of the mission, is like getting more of this information out there for people so that instructors have better information.
Yeah.
I find the people who come to my clinics who are instructors just like inhale it whole. They're
yeah.
like, oh, that's so funny. Obvious. I had a woman who is a vet. She's a research vet from Tufts. And I was explaining a lot of this stuff, and she'd go, oh, I'm so sorry, I don't know this.
Hmm.
I said, why would you know this?
You didn't come out of the womb knowing this.
Yeah, right. She said, well, it's so logical. I should have been
yeah.
able to figure it out.
I've
spent a lifetime figuring it out, you know, truly, that, you know, there just needs to be better information.
Yeah.
Better information.
More user-friendly, like you're saying,
yes.
to not make the physiology like rocket science, like you need a PhD and something to understand, but also, you know, in order to be able to understand it, but also the dressage language, which is so mysterious. I mean, can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, sure. This is kind of one of my biggest pet peeves, and I try to translate for people. In other words, you know, I'll give them sort of the whole physiological look at it, and then I'll say, well, in the dressage speak, we would say this,
mm-hmm.
you know. And do you see how that's incomplete for people?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, I don't know, you know what I mean, this term like engage the horse.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Well, yeah, what does that mean, you know? And, you know, well, it means that they're going to, you know, curl the joints of the hind legs
mm-hmm.
and they're going to, you know, they're going to use better appropriate energy, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's not just that simple. And part of the problem is that advanced riders learn this shorthand that
right.
all other advanced riders understand.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not the rank and file that we all teach all the time.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I mean, the majority, the demographics of the riding community are, you know,
training. First level.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they, you know, they don't really know what ride with your seat means.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, years ago, one of the barn manager came, Holly, what does it mean to ride with your seat? And I went, wow, that is a big question.
Mm.
I'm going to have to, like, copy some stuff out of books for you, and then we're going to talk some more.
Yeah.
Because that was years ago, before
wow.
I really went down this biomechanical route to the level that I have, because, it always just stuck with me that, you know, here was a woman who'd ridden all her life. She was an event rider. You know, she had a lot of good stuff going on, but she just didn't know what this meant.
Yeah.
You know, somebody told her that, no, use your seat. And she went,
how? yeah.
What?
But it's good for her that she asked you, because here's what
yeah.
happens, I think. Because, like you said, it becomes shorthand phrases that, you know, advanced riders, they just throw around and they know what they mean, that people,
yeah.
they hear these terms like collection or rounder or still your seat or something like that. And then
yeah.
because they've heard it so much, they're embarrassed to ask
yeah.
because they feel like they should know, and then they don't ask.
Right.
You know,
right.
And like the woman you were talking about, there's no reason you should know. If someone hasn't explained it to you and broken it down and dissected
right.
it, if you will, why should you know that? And so,
right.
you know, that's great that you're doing that for people.
Well, it's kind of part of the mission. And again, you know, when you go to the physiology ideas, you know, of movement, the science of movement, biomechanics, there are answers there.
Mm.
They're real answers. And then once you start to have a grasp of it, now you have tools to do your own problem solving.
Yeah.
My husband's a jazz drummer, and he teaches at Brown University. And his whole thing about teaching the drums is, I come in and I give you exercises, and I make sure you're doing them right, and then I come back the next week, and I check those exercises, and I give you new ones. But in the final analysis, you teach yourself to play the drums.
Mm.
And it's the same thing with riders. They teach themselves to ride. We give them the tools.
Right.
And the other thing that, you know, I want to help people have permission to do is to experiment more.
Mm-hmm.
Because they think there's just this one way,
Yeah.
And, you know, if you do it wrong, you're not going to break the horse unless you
right.
do something catastrophic. But,
yeah.
you know, by and large, you know, play with moving sideways. Play with leg yielding. You're not,
mm-hmm.
even if you do it wrong, you're going to be helping the horse get more supple. And you and the horse will figure it out together. And if you
yeah.
get sort of hip enough to what they're doing, the horse will tell you whether you're doing it right.
Because
if it's laborious, it's probably not right. If it's
yeah.
heavy and difficult. But the second, you know, that inner hind leg comes through in the right way, all of a sudden the horse is light or lifts himself or it's not hard or it's fluid.
Yeah, when
you
things
know?
Feel easy, it's right.
When, exactly. So,
yeah.
you know, and I think people get really bogged down into if I experiment, I'm going to ruin, I'm going to
yeah.
break, I'm going to destroy. No, you're not.
Be creative.
You know, it, exactly. It's a little laboratory between you and your horse.
Yeah, oh,
that's
a nice
fine.
Way to think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to experiment. So.
I have one student. She's a riot. She is so creative. She comes up with things I've never thought of. She had a horse many years ago that was struggling in canter pirouettes.
Mm-hmm.
So what she did all on her own, because she just plays, like you said, and she's creative.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen the polo players. They'll be galloping down the field.
Yes.
They'll be doing posting gallop or posting canter. They
yeah. yeah.
As if you're doing rising trot. So she started to do her pirouettes in this posting canter, like
uh-huh.
the polo players.
Uh-huh.
And she realized that she was freeing her horse's back because she was sitting too stiff, too hard, hips too frozen, not going with the movement. And
huh.
simply by doing this posting canter, all of a sudden, like you were saying, it was easy for her
yeah.
horse. And so I marvel at her creativity. She comes up with these wild things like this.
Well,
but
you
that's
know,
great problem solving.
Well, it is, and there's so many ways to do it. I mean, the part is just staying aware.
Yes.
You know, yes. stay aware of what's happening. You know, everything from, you know, I always say every spook is a bending opportunity.
There you go.
You know, the horse is flying sideways. You go, could you do a little more of that? Okay, now how about if we go the other way?
Awesome. See, I love that way of looking at things.
Yeah.
Like when you have a ride that you think is a disaster or part of your ride is a disaster,
yeah.
and if you can walk away and say, okay, what did I learn from that? You know,
right.
then you turn that into a learning opportunity. Thank you for picking up the wrong lead six times, because if you always picked up the correct lead, I'd never have to figure out what I was doing in my body or what I was
yeah.
not doing in your body, which would allow you to pick up the correct lead. Thank you. That's awesome. I'm glad that we had those so-called disasters, because it
right.
gives me the opportunity to learn. And I think that's great with the spook. Wow, that's cool. Now, do it again so I can try this.
And then, of course, the horse slows down and go, wait a minute, this is
yeah.
no longer my idea.
Yeah. but,
and
know,
that's effective, too.
But this is great for people who ride around going, okay, don't spook at that rock, don't spook at those flowers. If
yeah.
you think of everything that happens like that as a wonderful, like you say, laboratory, this living laboratory that
sure.
you're having, then it the whole thing becomes fascinating and interesting and not intimidating or scary.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool.
Well,
yeah. we covered a lot of ground. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
I don't know. I just think this is wonderful what you're doing with these interviews. I think it's very helpful to people to hear people from all different parts of the riding world talk about what they're doing, and it just really encourages people to open up their heads and think about things a little differently. So.
Yeah, and it's so fun for me because, you know, I do what I do, but I also know that I'm not an expert in so many of these other fields, and that's why it's so cool for me to bring, quote-unquote, the experts in, the equine dentists and
yeah.
the masseuses and the chiropractors and people like yourself, so that I can just it's just a richer, the entire program is richer by bringing in experts in the field rather than me trying to be the expert in everything, which, of course, I'm not. So it's fun for me because every time I do one of these interviews, I learn a lot as well.
Very cool indeed.
Yeah. And so your clinics, I know from my friend Chris, because she just taped at one of your clinics. Your clinics are absolutely awesome. I mean, she kept coming back and emailing me about how amazing they were. How would people go about contacting you if they wanted to set up a clinic?
Well, the best way is through my website, which is dressagebydesign.com. And, you know, you can also order my book and DVD that way. I am on Amazon with the book, but, you know, it's really if you come to me, then you kind of make that whole connection, you know, through my website. And I'm really good about answering people's emails and questions. You know, that's why the whole Facebook and Twitter thing is beyond me because I barely get my emails answered.
I hear you. I hear you. That's great.
I mean, I stick my toe in the water, but, you know, basically I'm just kind of, here's my website, dressagebydesign.com.
Okay.
And just kind of check it out. And there's, you know, there's other articles I've had published. And, you know, my clinic schedule isn't so, you know, nailed down that I can, you know, I'm sort of a few months out. And, you know what it's like scheduling. Things just change all the time. So
yeah.
People want to kind of find me, you know, they can email me that way. And, you know, the book has really been starting to travel. I got reviews in Dressage Today and Practical Horseman and also British Dressage, the woman who has been very supportive of my work, Jane Kidd, who is an author
herself. Of course.
Many times over, she just, right from the beginning, she figured out that I had something very cool.
Yeah.
And, you know,
definitely.
Many kudos to her. So, you know,
I used her as a resource a lot when I wrote my cross training book. She's great.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
because
isn't that
she's very, you know, just like you're saying, she's very clear and precise in the way that she says things. There's no mystery and you know, it's just boom, 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 so that anybody can understand. And that's the point. I mean, you can have the greatest information in the world, but if you can't articulate it and get it across to people, it doesn't do anybody any good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have some other articles that have been published and reviews of the book, and because they get reviewed in those, you know, bigger forums, then I start to get orders for books from all over the country. So, you know, I'm starting to really broaden out, as you know from Chris, I just came back from Colorado and Utah. You know, and again, you know, whenever I travel, I just see people are just desperate for this information.
Yeah, that's great.
And, you know, the more I can get it into the heads of other instructors, the better, you know what I mean? There's kind of my husband keeps saying, you should start a school. And I said, yeah, in my spare time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you're doing great work, Holly. And I thank you so much for giving me all this time today.
This was just a delight. We had a ball, didn't we?
Yes, we did. I told you it'd be fun.
I know.
Okay.
Take care.
You too.
And thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference.